This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on this beautiful Tuesday, live from Portland, Oregon. On the line with us is, by the way, there's a lot coming up in the program. I'll get to this in just a second. A lot coming up in the program. We're going to start out with Kimon Freeman about the D.C. Metro police and the treatment for white supremacists. And Trump just called Amorosa a dog. Misogynist, racist, dehumanizing. Malcolm Nance will be with us in the second hour of our program. Was Trump's meeting with Putin a second Yalta? And in our third program, Dr. Joe Rahm. We're getting dangerously close to a climate death spiral, according to a new study. Amazing stuff out there. But on the line with us right now is Kimon Freeman, the program director and host at We Act Radio, an activist with Black Lives Matter DC. WeActRadio.com is the website, and Kimon's Twitter handle is Guerrilla Artist. Kimon, welcome back to the program.
Peace, Tom. Can you hear me well?
Just fine, yeah. Great to have you again. It's been a while since we've talked. Before I get to the stuff around the Metro in D.C. and the police and the way, you know, the way everything went down this last weekend, I'm curious your thoughts on Trump's tweet about Omarosa.
Well, I think you answered it well yesterday on your show when you said this is the classic dog whistle in terms of what white supremacists have done since the dawn of time in this country and this attacking black people's intelligence. I mean, up until just last year, Hollywood were telling the world that black movies wouldn't sell overseas. I mean, I just wanted to sink in. They were saying that black movies don't matter outside of America, which is, like, laughable when we think about all of the black artists who had to flee America to have a career, the Paul Robesons, the countless artists that had to go overseas to have a career. He's sticking to the tried and proven status quo in terms of sending dog whistles out. But I shouldn't even say dog whistles, because right now everyone can hear this whistle. And I think that we're witnessing the dismantling of white supremacy brick by brick, and they're just circling the wagons.
Do you see him calling an African-American woman, a black woman, a dog as more misogyny, racism, both, or is the issue of just the general dehumanization of other people? I mean, famously in Rwanda, they called the Tutsis cockroaches. In Germany in the 30s, Hitler called the Jews rats. I mean, that continued for like 8 years in the media and in the press. What do you think what is the consequence of this? What do you think this really is all about?
Again, this is a long trail of tears. They have to, in order to dehumanize people, to justify the treatment of these people, is to refer to them as animals. It's a consistent tactic, as you alluded to. But we've heard the same things applied to Michelle Obama. Florida is not just online from trolls, but there was even police officers here in the nation's capital who shared that same sentiment and actually threatened to shoot her.
That's right, I'd forgotten. It's been a while.
Yeah, this is a long trail of tears, and it's all coming to the surface, and I'm glad it's out in the open, and we have to deal with the ugly truth of America, and we're going to wrestle with it, as you've seen in Portland 2 weeks ago and here in D.C. just on Sunday.
Yeah, and speaking of that, give us a recap of what happened in D.C. this last weekend.
Well, I would say that the protesters were somewhere in the upwards of 15 to 20,000. I think that the white supremacist alt-right, or whatever they want to go by in mainstream media, but it's white supremacist rally, was somewhere around 200 or 300. And they were the recipients of preferential treatment. They received, for those who do not know, a private car, police escorts, and no one knows what that cost was, and no one knows who paid for it. And it was falsely reported that they were refused to do so. The Metro released a statement saying that they would not provide preferential treatment for a hate group, but inadvertently they did do it. They said it was a matter of security. And I just want people to understand that imagine Black Lives Matter protesters receiving a police escort and a private car in Boston, celebrating or commemorating the death of a police officer. That is paramount to what has happened here. And actually, it's even worse because Black Lives Matter is not directly responsible for anyone's death, but white supremacists were here honoring the death of a young girl who died as a result of their activities.
Yeah, yeah, it's truly bizarre. Is the police department in D.C., are they going to thoughtfully look into this? Are they capable of introspection, do you think?
Yes, I've reached out to them myself personally, and inquiries have been made. I urge people to join this. This is a national concern. This is the nation's capital. This is not Cleveland. This is the nation's capital, and I think it's a national concern. And they can contact MPD. That would be I can give the email address out. It's MP. .dc.gov. I get again in later the show, but also there are actually calls from the unions here asking for the board of the Washington Metro Area Transit Authority to fire the general manager who okayed this. And I can give those numbers off if people would like to do something. That is our motto here. We are Credo, and it's Northern Virginia Transit. They can be contacted at 703-524-3322. North Virginia Transit can be contacted at 703-524-3322. And our mayor of the nation's capital, Mayor Bowser, is 202-727-2643. That's 202-727-2643. And then, of course, Larry Hogan, who's up for re-election, mind you, against a very formidable opponent in Ben Jealous. And we're looking to see how this pans out in the election this year, and I hope people will get out and vote this year. Gary Logan is 410-974-3901. That's 410-974-3901. And this is just small things that people can do to really resonate and go a long way if we're really serious about confronting the issues of our day. Again, this is not about safety. It was about preferential treatment to a hate group who was responsible for a girl's death and lied about it. So this should be completely unacceptable. And if they want to the police accountability, that's mpd.press@dc.gov. mpd.press@dc.gov is the email for official inquiry to not only why they did this, but how much they paid to have this done. This was city. I'm assuring you that they did not pay for this themselves, and that taxpayer money was allocated for this preferential treatment.
Yeah, it's truly remarkable. Kimon, we're talking with Kimon Freeman, activist of Black Lives Matter in D.C. and the program director and host over at We Act Radio, our D.C. affiliate, the radio station that carries our show. And
the only one in the nation's capital that carries Tom Hartman.
There you go, and we're proud to be on it. Kimon, with regard to Black Lives Matter in D.C., how is the movement doing?
I think this has actually invigorated the movement. Again, there was upwards of 15 to 20,000 people out there. A good portion of them was all supporters of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I have to remind everyone that there's a 2006 FBI report. This is not the We Act Radio report. This is not the Tom Hartman report. This is not the left-wing report. It's the FBI report, who's not a friend of progressive thinkers. And they have reported that as of 2006, all levels of law enforcement have been infiltrated by white supremacists. And that has not been dealt with or acknowledged openly. And that's why you see, like you saw in Portland 2 weeks ago, the police taking the size of the right-wingers and attacking the protesters. It's actually trying to address the hatred in this country. But we see this, look at Standing Rock. We don't have to go any farther than that, and how people who was trying to protect their water was treated, and then see how white supremacists are treated.
Yeah, yeah, it's all solid. Kimon Freeman, program director and host at React Radio, activist with Black Lives Matter DC. ReactRadio.com is the website, and Kimon, your Twitter handle is Guerrilla Artist, right?
That's correct, and also at React Radio, of course.
Cool. Okay, Kimon Freeman, thanks so much, Kimon.
Fighting a good fight. Thank you, Tom.
Amen. Good talking with you. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with more of the news of the day. And boy, is there a lot of it. And your calls. What are your thoughts on Trump's latest tweet right after this? And welcome back. Lori in Milland. Is it Milland or Milland, Illinois?
Milland, Illinois. Tom,
Milland.
How are you doing?
I'm well. What's up?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that I had heard through the grapevine that there is our tax, gas tax is going to be going up. It's like from 35 cents, I believe it is now, to up to 85 cents. Well, I guess then there's supposedly is going to be some kind of a shortfall there, too, in between all that. And they want to then also raise our vehicle registration from $101 a year to over $578 a year. That is just ridiculous. What are we supposed to do?
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of money, particularly for low-income working people. On the one hand, on the other hand, as you know, the Trump administration struggles to keep gas prices down because they view that as, you know, gas prices going up as politically toxic. As long as they are keeping gas prices down, sales of gas-guzzling cars are going up, and sales of fuel-efficient cars are going down. So, you know, raising the price of gas, you know, particularly if that's what's necessary to replace the potholes in the roads, makes a certain amount of sense. The vehicle registration, annual registration, if your numbers are right, Laurie, and I have no independent corroboration of any of this, but the vehicle registration fee going up, you know, by increasing by $400 a year, right after, just, you know, about 2-3 months ago, this study came out from, I think it was Pew, that found that 40% of Americans cannot sustain a $400 expense. That would be enough to throw them off their game economically. You know, some startling percentage of Americans can't even afford, don't even have a credit card with that much credit left on it. They're just maxed out. So, you know, I don't know what to make of it, Laurie. I don't know where it's going to go and how political it's going to get, and whether is this a Democratic administration? No, you've got a Republican governor, don't you?
Yes, it's a Democratic administration mostly, with Mike Madigan as the, you know, head honcho, and he's kind of doing the puppet strings for everybody else there. And then Rauner, he's kind of trying to fight everybody, and then not only on top of that, he's fighting everybody, but he's making it so that everybody, you know, you can't do anything. You know what I mean? It's messed up.
It sounds like a mess. Laurie, thanks for the call and thanks for the heads up on that. That's fascinating. I'm going to have to look into it. There's interesting, speaking of taxes, Betsy DeVos, you know, one of her 10 $40 million yachts was, the ropes were loosened and it drifted out into the Lake Erie, I guess it was, a few months ago, a month or two ago. You know, no big deal, but it kind of pointed out that she's got 10 $40 million yachts, or 10 yachts. I don't know if they're all $40 million. Some of them might be worth more than that. But this from Bayless Fiddeman over at thinkprogress.org. Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos came under fire this week after reports suggested she has avoided paying taxes on the $40 million yacht she registered in the Cayman Islands. The DeVos family has reportedly managed to dodge paying more than $2 million in taxes, money that would have funded a number of public services, including the education system that DeVos has devoted herself to dismantling. Right. We'll be right back. So there's a bunch of things in the news today that I want to get just quickly go through with you, and we can discuss these. We can discuss anything you want, really. It's kind of, we're doing anything goes summer this summer. And the first, of course, is Donald Trump this morning saying good work by General Kelly for quickly firing that dog, referring to Omarosa. Roberta Chalmers tweets back, you called her a dog? What's wrong with you? You should be so ashamed of yourself. Otto English tweets back, perhaps electing an apprentice host to be president of the U.S. wasn't such a great idea, America. He still thinks he's in his fake boardroom. David Battish tweets back, please remove the American flag from your Twitter page, Trump. You're an embarrassment to the nation. Amanda tweets back, I don't like presidents who call women dogs. Margie Murdoch tweets back, oh my God, that's a terrible thing for you to say. Wow, zero self-control. Glenn at the Food Truck Kings tweets back, Can you read what you just wrote? This is a man, maybe in your case, talking to a woman, talking about a woman. That is disgusting language. I don't care who is right or wrong here. Just totally disgusting language from any person. And Patrick Tomlinson at Worldcon 76 tweets back, trading the racist dog whistle for a racist megaphone? Sippy cup Caligula? Right. Okay, so number one, you know, what's that all about? Number two, I don't know why we didn't all, like, just totally expect this. But the Congressional Budget Office, the agency in the federal government put into place by Congress to provide Congress with nonpartisan, unbiased, actual, factual budget information. The Congressional Budget Office has come out and said that if you want to give somebody health care in the United States right now, you have basically two choices. You can sign them up for Obamacare, in which case the government is subsidizing the cost of their health insurance, or you can sign them up for Medicaid, in which case government is paying for the entire cost of their health insurance or of their health care. Medicare or Medicaid is a health insurance program. And it turns out that Medicaid is cheaper than Obamacare in terms of what the government pays. Obamacare costs an average of $6,300 per person per year. Medicaid costs an average of $4,900 per person per year. Now, why would that be? Well, because Obamacare is done with private for-profit insurance companies who have to skim 20% off the top just to stay in business and pay their executives hundreds of millions of dollars a year and, you know, buy corporate jets with gold-plated water faucets and have a board of directors where everybody's making millions of dollars. And in the case of United Healthcare, have over 100 executives who make more than $1 million a year. All this kind of stuff. I mean, these salespeople and logos and fancy buildings and marketing campaigns, none of that is paid for by Medicaid. Medicaid is, you know, it's a very simple government office with government workers, government bureaucrats who are, you know, making a decent wage with a decent pension, but, you know, they're not making anything like the $1 billion plus the paycheck that Stephen Jay Hemsley has taken out of United Healthcare. So here we have proof. If Medicaid is cheaper than Obamacare, and Obamacare is about as efficient as you can get in terms of health insurance. I mean, in fact, the health insurance companies were taking anywhere from 30 to 50% off the top just for themselves as their skimmed off profit. Obamacare cut that down to 20%, maximum 20%. But that's still 20% we don't need to pay. Medicaid runs with about a 2% overhead. Obamacare, and which is not to knock Obamacare specifically, but anything that involves private health insurance is going to run with a 20, 25% overhead or more. Plus, you've got the federal bureaucracy on top of that because somebody has to pay the insurance companies. Yesterday, somebody called and asked about Nancy Pelosi. You know, when are we going to get new leadership for the Democratic Party? And I was like, come on, this is a Republican meme. This is pure and simple. You know, they don't like powerful women. Republicans are intimidated by and afraid of powerful women. And I would say, in fact, Omarosa, you know, she has a following. She is well known. Her name is a common, you know, everybody in America knows who she is. Right. And so, you know, Trump, of course, doesn't like that. Oh, my God, powerful women. We can't have that. Well, they also don't like Nancy Pelosi because she's a powerful woman. And I went off on a rant about that yesterday, that this is nuts. Nancy Pelosi is really, she's done an extraordinary job as Speaker of the House and an extraordinary job as House Minority Leader. And today, I don't know if Paul Krugman was listening to my thing yesterday or not, because yesterday he wrote this piece, Who's Afraid of Nancy Pelosi, which is just great. I read it in this morning's New York Times. He points out that Trump's tax cuts are very unpopular. Republicans are not even bothering to run on them because everybody gets it, that it's a scam. Right. It was just, you know, transferring a couple of $1 trillion to the very, very rich and big corporations and had nothing to do with the average person. So they're not running on that anymore. Trump's trade wars remain unpopular. So what does the Republican Party have to run on? Surprise, surprise. Lies about how Medicare for All is going to cost a fortune when actually it's going to save us money. Lies, just flat out lies. Paul Krugman doesn't point that out in this article. Instead, he goes to number two, which is the other thing that you see appearing in many of these Republican ads where they're running for Congress and things like that. And that's Nancy Pelosi. He refers to her as a boogeywoman. You know, and then he says, so what has Pelosi achieved? She played a crucial role. These are Paul Krugman's words. She played a crucial role in turning back George W. Bush's attempt to privatize Social Security. She was a key figure, perhaps arguably even more crucial than President Obama in passing the Affordable Care Act. She enacted financial reform, which has protected many Americans from fraud. Yes, the GOP is trying to take it apart, but there it is. She helped pass the Obama stimulus plan that turned us from losing 700,000 jobs a month to gaining hundreds of thousands of jobs a month for 7 years. It also laid the foundation for the green energy revolution. So Paul Krugman asked the question, what's so radical? If you're going to say Pelosi is a radical Democrat, which is what the Republicans are saying, what's so radical about protecting retirement income, expanding health care, and reining in runaway bankers? Well, you know, the Republicans don't think anyone should have retirement income, at least not through the government. It should be done by private companies who are, you know, screwing you and taking a piece of your money. They don't think that anybody should have health care unless they've worked their way up to the top. And runaway bankers, that is the Republicans. So, and then he looks at the Republicans who were Speaker of the House. Newt Gingrich, who was cheating on his wife while he was impeaching Clinton. Dennis Hastert, molesting teenage boys. John Boehner didn't do anything except oppose everything Obama did. And Paul Ryan is a flim-flam man, a fake budget hawk.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's nice to see your first instincts validated in print. Thank you, Paul Krugman. We'll be back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this. Hey, speaking the truth to multinational corporations, we'd really rather you didn't know all about. Tom Hartman here with you. Dion in Round Lake, Illinois. Hey, Dion, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
Great. What's up?
Yeah, there's still a lot of tapes to be released by Michael Cohen and Omarosa, especially the one with the N-word. How do you think this could affect during the elections in October?
I doubt it'll have that much impact on this fall's elections. I think that everybody who is voting, Trump is not on the ballot. And the damage that he is doing to the Republican Party has largely already been done. It was done by putting children in cages, over 500 of whom are still there. It was done by, this long history of everything, you know, the repeated lies, the misogyny, the hatred, the racism. I mean, you know, this was particularly, calling Omarosa a dog is in particularly bad taste, but I don't think that it's going to push anybody over the top.
But I think the N-word is far worse than the dog word. I think he'll lose black voters and the black committee or the black pastors that he's aligned with.
I think that's entirely possible, Dion. However, so far, Omarosa is claiming that he used the N-word in a Celebrity Apprentice taping, and the Celebrity Apprentice producers are saying they're not releasing any of the tapes because they have a contract with Trump that says that they can't. And she doesn't claim that she actually has a tape of that. What she has is a tape of Katrina Pearson, who was Trump's spokesperson, saying that, yeah, he used the N-word and he's embarrassed. But that's not quite the smoking gun. I mean, that's what she released this morning on CBS, and that apparently provoked Trump to call her a dog. But that's not the same thing as saying, here's the actual audio. So I'm skeptical that's going to happen. But even if it does, I think, most African-Americans are going to say, yes, what's new? I mean, we expected this of Trump. We're not surprised. And I think, frankly, most white Americans, who have any consciousness at all will say the same thing. So I'm not sure that this is a game changer, Dion. I think it's just a verifier. Thanks a lot for the call, though. That said, Kenyatta in Redland, California. Hey, Kenyatta, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Always a pleasure to watch you, sir. I wanted to make a comment, actually a couple, but first I wanted to start with Mr. Trump's tweet about Omarosa being a dog. You know, anyone with the intellectual acuity of a retarded gnat knows what Omarosa is all about. However, that doesn't negate the factual basis of what she has brought forth. Now, I don't care one way or the other, but what I do want to say is that this is a guy who has referred to NFL players who are mainly black as SOBs. He's talked about grabbing parts of women's anatomy and with a very crude terminology. he has his first lady, or Melania Trump. You can go online and see all types of nude photographs of her. He's talked about dating his daughter. And, you know, here's the thing I don't get. If Barack Obama had done any of these things.
Any one of them.
Any one of them. It is just so amazing, this disconnect. And this leads me to my second point, Tom. I have been on the air with you several times. You've been gracious enough to allow me to be. But year after year, doesn't matter if it's Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice, this guy that owned the Clippers, whatever. We're having this conversation on race. I am so sick of this conversation on race because there's a disconnect with white America. I'm sorry. I heard a commentator this morning say that he did not feel that the term dog and referring to Omarosa was necessarily racist. But what I white people seem to be unable to understand is, I don't expect you to understand it, but it is racist because, you see, black people are the only people in this country that were constitutionally considered basically livestock.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say that to me, it's not like, you know, because the guy said, went on to say, well, he's called other people dogs. See, this is the problem, Tom, and until we can have a really honest discussion about this, you know, the memorial, the Confederate memorials should not be taken down. I love them. They should stay there. White people want to, you know, this storied history. This is part of our history. What, right across the street from that Robert E. Lee statue, have one of the black people that hung from trees.
Yeah.
Just tell the whole story.
Yeah, or change the plaque on it to say traitor. I'm still in favor of taking them down, but, you know, yeah. Kenyatta, thank you. Thank you. Excellent points all, and well made. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, not too much, Tom. There's been a report that the United States has dispatched a 3-star general to investigate this bombing of a school bus in Yemen.
Right.
Now, yeah, I just have a question about that. Why a 3-star general? I mean, is it possible this was actually an American plane that dropped this bomb, or do you think it's just some sort of ruse, you know, to show that we actually care about collateral damage?
Well, first of all, it's making big international news. Secondly, it was an American bomb that was dropped on that, or missile, regardless of whether it was fired by an American plane or a Saudi plane. And third, in all probability, that Saudi plane was in-air refueled by American tanker planes. We are providing refueling, we're providing logistical support, we're providing weaponry, we're providing the ordnance, the bombs, to the Saudis. And, you know, for this brutal war in Yemen that is going after, you know, the Shia minority there, this is the you know, continuation of the Sunni-Shia wars. And so I think that the American military is starting to take this seriously, is looking at this saying, you know, we're really being hurt by this in terms of public relations around the world. And Saudi Arabia is, you know, Prince Mohammed bin Salman has lost control. He's you know, and he thought he was going to have a short war and emerge victorious, and it was going to be like Ronald Reagan with Grenada or Margaret Thatcher with the Falkland War. And instead, he's got himself, you know, mired down. He's got over a million refugees. He's got over 500,000 people living right now on the edge of starvation. People, you've got, you know, thousands of children who are suffering from cholera. Hundreds of thousands, actually. It is a humanitarian disaster, and the fact that the American press isn't covering it while the rest of the world's press is, you know, it should be a major source of embarrassment to our television networks and our media outlets. But the pressure from the rest of the world is starting to tell, Dave, and I think that's what's going on, frankly. Janice in Englewood, Colorado. Hey, Janice, what's on your mind today?
I have left the Democratic Party because they are going to take money from the fossil fuel industry. Fracking is killing my state. It is killing this planet, and it needs to be banned.
I hope you will tell Tom Perez that.
I did.
Good. Okay. Janice, thank you. I wouldn't go that far. I'm not, you know, quite a single-issue voter, but I certainly understand the sentiment, and I think it's outrageous. Jill in Princeton, Minnesota. Hey, Jill, what's up?
Hi, I'm a white, half-century-old woman who is saying to Minnesota, get out and vote. We can do what we can for all colors here in Minnesota. We have Minnesota Care. We have 10,000 lakes. And we have planes flying over our head that we don't worry about bombing us. So get out and vote, people, please.
Amen. Today is the primary in Minnesota, isn't it?
Pardon me?
Today is the primary in Minnesota, and the Republicans are hoping to take control of the state in the general election.
Absolutely, get out and vote.
Yeah, amen. Amen. And make sure that you're registered and all that. In fact, we've got,
Don't have to. Just show up.
Yeah, okay, you got it. Jill, thank you for the call. But I would encourage anybody anywhere to check their registration, because there's some hinky stuff going on. I'm going to get into that in the next hour about what's going on in Florida. This is really, really spooky. Pam in Chicago. Hey, Pam, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well. What's up?
Tom calling from Chicago. And my concern is I'm a Rosa. I'm suspect on some of the things she says and does. However, I think she knew Donald Trump was a racist, but her, her ambition to succeed and, I guess, connect with him, I think that superseded her her intention.
Her judgment. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, she was in the Clinton administration when Bill Clinton was president.
I didn't know that at first.
And she tweeted in 2015, I think, "I'm ready for Hillary." I think that Omarosa is one of these political hangers-on, you know, like some people are attracted to movie stars, other people are attracted to politicians in terms of, you know, wanting to have some of the mojo that goes along with them, some of that, whatever. And Omarosa has thrown her lot in with the political side, but, that doesn't mean that she's nuts or that we should ignore her, particularly when she's...
No, I don't think she's wacky at all, Tom. And I think there is some validity to some of the things that she's saying.
Yeah, I agree.
And I wanted to ask you a question. On the tape, when General Kelly said that the people, I think he said the staff works for me and
right.
not the president. Did you get that?
I did, and I was surprised that didn't
shocked.
Get more play, and because that's the kind of thing that you would think would upset, Cadet Bonespurs.
And Trump surely lied. He knew about the firing. But let me just move quickly to race, Tom. I always ask this question. How much more are black people expected to take here in Chicago? There's a big battle race. There are tales of two cities. Black communities are depleted of resources, Tom, where everything goes to our downtown area and North Side, Gold Coast, which are wealthier areas in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And we're fighting here to get a new mayor and certainly to get rid of that Republican Governor Rauner. But what I want to ask, Tom, we need more of the clergy, and I'm saying the white clergy, not the religious right, the right wing, but the liberals,
mm-hmm.
to stand up and say more and do more about the racism. There should be sermons, Tom, every Sunday on loving your neighbor and racism and trying to combat it. And I think that's not coming enough from where I stand, from just the liberal clergy, if you
yeah.
will.
A lot of the liberal clergy are speaking out on these things on a real regular basis. The Church of Christ, the United Methodist Church, there's and certainly, I mean, you know, the Unitarian Universalists are frequently on these issues. But I get what you're saying with regard to Chicago and the stark difference between poor communities and rich communities, white communities and black communities. I think that one simple, straightforward solution to this, or at least a piece of the solution, would be to I think it would have to be done on a state-by-state basis, probably by amending state constitutions, would be to say that property taxes can no longer be levied on a local basis. They have to be levied on a statewide basis, and they have to be distributed on a statewide basis. And that way, every school in the state gets the same amount of funding from the statewide property tax. And that way you don't end up with rich neighborhoods having fancy schools and nice neighborhoods and good lighting and good infrastructure, and poor communities having lousy schools and poor infrastructure and bad lighting and things like that. If it was done on a state basis, I think it would solve a lot of those problems. But
and changing the tax structure,
yeah.
right? Because right,
yeah.
going to progressive tax. And lastly, Tom, I just want to add, we also need to talk about the deficiencies and the discrimination in employment.
Yes.
We just found out in our Loop area, downtown area, that I think only 10% of blacks are employed.
Wow. That's incredible. Pam, thanks for the call. We'll be right back. It's 47 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Occupying the media, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this. And welcome back. John, watching Free Speech TV in New York City, you wanted to correct something about this three-star general. I did not know about this, by the way. I just assumed Dave was telling the straight story. What's going on?
Well, Democracy Now! Reported this morning that, yes, a three-star general is being dispatched to help Saudi Arabia do their own investigation.
Because,
you know, when it was called for, of course, an independent, and Saudi Arabia said, oh, no, we'll do our own. And then they said the three-star general was dispatched to assist them in their own, you know. So it was pretty ludicrous.
Yeah, okay.
That was the point they made, and I thought it was worth noting.
Yeah. I get it, and it is, and thank you for that correction,
sure.
John. I appreciate it. Let's see here. Peter in Winter Haven, Florida. Hey, Peter, what's up?
Hey, Tom. So I just wanted to address something that I don't think anyone else has addressed. If I'm Russia and you're America and I'm your geopolitical enemy since the Ukrainian invasion, I would obviously want to support the Republicans. Even if you don't believe the whole Trump-Russia connection, I would obviously want to support the Republicans in the elections. Why? Because fundamentally, Republican policies are not good for America. They'll increase the deficit, might lead to the next crash. They're not going to do anything about pollution. They're going to pollute our air and water. They're not going to do anything about improving race relations. They're not going to give us any universal health care in case there's a massive calamity and we need universal coverage. So I think that this is something that's no one's ever really addressing. Why would Russians want to support Republicans in the first place? Well, obviously, not to better America, but to help destroy it. And how do you do that? You obviously support the party that's not going to be good for America. And that'll be all.
Those are all excellent points, Peter. I would add that because when the Soviet Union fell, and all private property in the Soviet Union was owned by the government, and there was, it was true Marxism, or actually it wasn't true Marxism. It was a kind of crony version of Marxism. But nonetheless, there was no private property. And so they had to figure out how to move from a communist economy to a capitalist economy. And Milton Friedman and a bunch of guys in the Chicago School of Economics went over there and said, I'm not sure Friedman himself did. He went to Chile. He might have been too old to do this in the Soviet Union. But they went over to Russia and they said, here's how to do it. And they voucherized everything, and then people sold the vouchers, and these oligarchs were buying up the vouchers. And basically, the ones who knew the system gamed the system and got insanely rich. And the consequence of our libertarian economic advice to the Soviet Union, or to Boris Yeltsin more directly, is that Russia has become an oligarchy by and large. It is ruled by the oligarchs, by and for the oligarchs. And to the extent that the Republican Party favors a particular political and economic system in the United States, it's oligarchy. The Republican Party loves oligarchy. The oligarch Koch brothers basically run the Republican Party. They've got a larger political system than the Republican Party itself. They determine who's going to be elected, who's going to be even nominated in many cases. And so, of course, you would expect an oligarchic power to look at the Republican Party and say, these are our guys. They're into great wealth and all this kind of thing. So I'm not surprised by it. I get your point, too. That assumes actual malice on the part of the Russians, which may be the case. But I think that certainly looking at a political party and saying, you guys are just like us, that explains a lot, too, in my opinion. Peter, thanks for the call. Excellent observation. We'll be back with more calls and more of the news right after this. It's Viagra for your brain, the Tom Hartman program. Just don't tell Limbaugh, he'll want some. Troy in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Troy, what's on your mind? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great.
I have a couple of friends that work with me, people that shouldn't be, but they support Trump. But the problem I have is once they come to me with, they throw out the talking point of, look how good the economy is. He's done so much for black people. Black unemployment is so low. But I try to say that's not really his policy. I believe those are policies that were in place and started to increase during the previous administration.
Yes, now, this is the 10th year of the Obama expansion, number one. And number two, Trump put it on steroids with a $1.5 trillion charge card. And I'll tell you, you give me $1.5 trillion line of credit on my MasterCard, I'll show you what it means to live large. And that's what Trump did.
Right. So now I want to be able to come back with factual talking points as far as you have to give me something that Trump actually did during his time in the economy to boost and raise the economic level, as opposed to I try to point back to stuff that Obama did, maybe like the stimulus package was part of it, but not all of it.
Sure.
Maybe investing in things like clean energy that created jobs, things of that sort. But I want to be able to point to factual evidence and go down a line of talking points of my own when people start to boast about his investment in the economy and how he's doing so great.
Yeah.
I don't believe it's because of him.
Well, I think a real simple one is that President Obama put $700 million into the economy. Now, the Republicans demanded that about $200 million of that be tax cuts, which, you know, is not the most effective way to stimulate an economy. But there was $500 million of solid stimulus, you know, the cash for clunkers program, the solar energy rebate. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff there that, and it was spread over a wide, and lots of infrastructure projects. You know, hundreds of millions of dollars in infrastructure. All those things put money into the hands of working people, and that almost instantly, I mean, you know, within a matter of months, stopped us from sliding deeper into a Great Depression and brought us out and started creating jobs. Obama had multiple quarters and months that were better than any of the ones that Trump has had, you know, with the single exception of the unemployment rate being so low right now. But Trump then came into power, and he took $1.5 trillion, twice what Obama had invested in stimulating the economy. And instead of, you know, paying for it, Obama's stimulus was 100% paid for, right? We paid for it with taxes. We took money from the federal government that was already paid for, that didn't increase the debt, and we spent that into the economy and stimulated the economy and brought the economy back. Trump borrowed $1.5 trillion. He put it on the national credit card. And $1 trillion of that has been used by corporations now just to buy back their own shares, which means that $1 trillion has gone from the federal government, which borrowed that money, into the hands of corporations, and they are now in the process, by buying back their own shares, they're in the process of handing that money to their senior executives and their big stockholders. So basically, the rich people got, so far, $1 trillion of that $1.5 trillion. So still, $1.5 trillion is a massive amount of stimulus that you can't ignore. It was done in a way that Republicans will always scream about, you know, adding to the federal debt. We've got a deficit this year that's going to be over $1 trillion. We haven't seen that in a long, long time. And so this is, it's not surprising that the economic recovery has lasted longer than it was supposed to or that it typically would. I mean, this is the first time I think this recovery has lasted longer than any other recovery, or maybe any other except one, since the end of World War II, which is huge. And it's being held together because, you know, Trump basically shot it up with steroids. So that's what I would say, Troy, and that, you know, that I would think that that'd probably be enough. Ivan in DuPage, Illinois. Hey, Ivan, what's on? Thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Thank you. You know, I want to thank Antifa. They had a great victory for America Sunday.
Yeah, I agree.
They're the true Americans. They drove those fighting Nazis who knew they would get their rear ends kicked if they marched back into the internet holes, where they can whine and whine about how the police didn't protect them in Charlottesville. You know, like our bullies, they cry like babies when someone stands up to them. I only wish I was 20 years younger. You know, Arlington is full of Nazi killers. And any American who supports Nazis is urinating on their graves.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And by Nazi killers, you mean people who killed Nazis, which is, you know, exactly what we did in World War II.
In World War II, that's
yep.
What we did. We killed Nazis.
Yep, yep. And, yeah, you're right. They're peeing on their graves. I'm with you, Ivan. Ivan, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to Chicago's Progressive Talk. We'll be back. We've got, this is going to be interesting. Malcolm Nance is going to drop by, and we're going to be talking about Trump and Russia and all this kind of stuff. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.